Welcome to the That Healing Feeling podcast. I'm your host, Faith Ashenden, founder and CEO of That Healing Feeling, where we show you how to become a self-healer of mind, body, and spirit through nervous system regulation. Join me and thousands of my other students as I dive into the world of neuroscience, subconscious programming, energetics, and radical self-love. In this podcast, you will learn that your body and mind are meant to heal, and that under the right circumstances, we can experience miraculous healing by leveraging our own internal infrastructure. Let me guide you as we challenge preconceived notions and outdated narratives and dive into the empowering world of self-healing. My intention is that you leave this podcast full of hope and actionable tools. So without further ado, let's dive in. Hello and welcome to the That Healing Feeling podcast for an episode that I have never done before. Today, I am live coaching a beautiful person from my community on Instagram, and I recorded it for a podcast so that you could listen to the session. So if you follow me on Instagram at That Healing Feeling, then you will see that I posted a reel that I was going to pick two people from my community to live coach in a one-on-one session for free. I don't actually offer one-to-one sessions anymore, so I felt like this was really special and just like a beautiful way to connect and support and say thank you so much to everyone who's in my community, because like you make everything worthwhile. Connecting with you fuels me. So I picked two beautiful ladies, and today, you get to hear my first coaching session with Stephanie Cogliano. She is a second grade teacher from Pennsylvania who has been following me since I launched my Instagram in 2018 when I was still healing. So it honestly was sort of like surreal full circle moment because she's like one of the OGs, right? So we had this amazing connection. In this podcast, we go into Stephanie's story, which I obviously hadn't heard before. So you're really getting this raw, authentic, real-time coaching right here on the episode. We go into her story. She beautifully shares openly with us, which I appreciate so much because I know that it's going to resonate with so many of you and make you feel heard, less alone, and connected. And then we dive into some coaching. I help Stephanie with her goals and give her some tools to focus deeply on an identity shift and give her a, if you want to call it, a prescription, which is a brain training tool, which will reduce her symptoms in 4 weeks. I'm not sure yet whether or not I'm going to get her back on the podcast or how I'm going to do it, but we're checking in 4 weeks, and I'm definitely going to let you know how she's doing in some capacity because I know you're all going to want to hear that she has improved, and I know she will. She is such a kind soul, and I'm so blessed to be connected with her. And I can't wait for you to hear this one-of-a-kind session and to know what you think about it. I hope it encourages you, fills your cup, makes you feel connected to me, to Stephanie, and to everyone in my community that is focused on healing and hope and abundance. Thank you so much for being here, and let's dive right in. Okay, Stephanie, I am so excited for this podcast. We both are just like chatting before recording that this is, it's kind of like a first for both of us because I've never done coaching on a podcast. And second of all, I don't really offer one-to-one coaching as we were talking about. And so I think this is going to be really, really fun. And obviously we're going to get to know each other really well. And obviously it's your first time on the podcast. So welcome and thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this opportunity. I just said to you, it feels like I've won the lottery. Been following you for a very long time, and just watching your healing journey has just inspired me and taught me so much about my healing journey and how to advocate for myself. So this is just so cool. Thank you.
That means so much to me, honestly. Like, obviously, like, I started sharing about healing chronic illness when I was really sick. And my goal was to just like give people hope that healing is possible. So whenever someone says, oh, it's given me hope or something like that, it just is really meaningful to know that I've done that. So I really appreciate you saying that. And I really appreciate you being part of this community, which I love. We were saying earlier, you know, like, it's so special to be able to connect now with social media with people from everywhere who want to heal, because there's a lot of narrative out there that's not focused on healing. And there needs to be more focused on our capacity to heal and focusing on hope and abundance and freedom and all of that good stuff. So I appreciate this community for that, including you and the ability to connect from Pennsylvania to England. And yeah, I want to preface this podcast with what I said earlier, which is, you know, we all know that regulation work takes time. I don't accept the narrative that it has to be this long grueling process whatsoever, but it's certainly to have an impact on our chronic conditions does take repetition on the daily. So hopefully we have some good jumping off points here that you can implement. And like I said, we'll check in. But for anyone listening, certainly want to set that expectation that it certainly is not a 1 hour, one and done sort of process. If only one day, maybe. I'm certainly working towards making that a reality for people, but I would love to start it off with, Stephanie, just why you're here today. You know, I asked on a post for those who don't know, I got on a reel and said, hey, I'd love to do a live coaching session. Like, just give me your story and we'll hop on and chat. So like, I would love to know, for those who obviously didn't see that reel and didn't see your story, like, as much as you're willing to share, why are you here? What's your story?
So my story with chronic illness and healing is a long one. I'm 34 years old. So for about a third of my life, I have been really struggling just with all the things. Started out with a Hashimoto's diagnosis in 2012, which was right when I was at the very beginning of my teaching career. And I remember I was walking in the dollar store buying some things for my classroom, and I got a call from my doctor with my lab results. And she's like, you have Hashimoto's. And I was like, at that time, that sounded just like such a foreign term. And I was like, can you explain what that is? And she's like, well, it's a thyroid condition where your thyroid's not producing enough thyroid hormone. I don't even think like the word thyroid was on my radar. I was like, okay, well, what does that mean for me? Like carrying my basket around the store. She's like, well, you're probably going to need to be on a medication for the rest of your life. I was like, okay. She's like, well, schedule an appointment. I'll come in. I'll go over your results. We'll get that prescription. And I was like, okay. Hung up the phone and went home and just started Googling. And, you know, a decade ago, there wasn't as much wonderfulness on the internet about this condition. And I just was like, I just felt like someone punched my gut. And I thought something was wrong, something that I did that was wrong. I was very healthy, very active. Aside from what I thought was a normal stress level, I was baffled. Like, how could this happen? And I was, only thing I was seeing online was that this happened to like unhealthy people. And I considered myself a very healthy person. And hearing you're going to have to be on a medication for the rest of your life, I think not at the time, but something inside me went off. A part of me that I've recently started to learn more about was, I was like, okay, well, challenge accepted. That's not going to happen. So it took me years to figure out even just the right medication for me. I tried every single thyroid medication that's available, saw some of the best endocrinologists in my area. We have some of the best health systems in the state where I live. And I just wanted this medication to make me feel like myself again. And it never did. And I was like, this is not how the rest of my life is going to be. And I ended up learning about like the naturopathic route. And I started working on that, saw a doctor, and ended up going gluten-free and been gluten-free for most of this time, started to see some improvement. I've done the Chinese medicine route. I have done just combinations of supplements. I remember being on like 15 different supplements during the day. And it just, I just was like, this is like literally taking over my life. And there was a break in all of that when I figured out the right like eating routine, the right workout routine, the right like stress management routine. And I actually was able to come off of my thyroid medication. I had no detectable antibodies and I was off of my medication for about 2 years. And that was a very condensed version of all of the work that went into that. So by like 2018, I was off of my medication and I felt free. And I didn't realize how much just even taking the smallest pill, just like it just really affected me. And I felt like I won when I was able to, you know, my endocrinologist took me a while to find the right one. And when I did, that was when we were able to come across all of this wonderful healing. And based on all of the things that I had experienced, she actually has changed the way that she approaches Hashimoto's patients, especially young Hashimoto's patients who are healthy and or who don't fit the typical narrative of a person with Hashimoto's. And I still work with her. She's wonderful. You know, we start out our appointments and she just asks me, like, what am I doing? And how is it helping me? And I don't think I ever have had that experience with a doctor before. And she's in a regular healthcare. It's not a naturopath. She's just, you know, a wonderful human who was willing to accept that treatment paths can be different for different people. And, you know, based on what I've shared and things that I've learned from you, I remember when you were very sick, I was also very sick. And I remember just not being able to find anyone in my circle in my life that was dealing with these things. And, you know, there's only so many people that can hear you're tired or you don't feel like doing anything. And, you know, there's very few people who understand what that actually, that narrative is like when you're living it every day without actually living it. So that was, you know, part of my story is finding you and, you know, even asking for the right blood work and knowing that there was alternative thyroid medications. You know, some of the medications you had shared, I asked to try and, you know, one of them ended up working for me. But fast forward, knowing that I was able to like overcome this and heal, and now knowing that I'm not in that same place and I'm back on medication and I'm not feeling myself, I know it's there. And like to everyone listening, like you don't have to take this medication for the rest of your life. It's possibly an option for you. And, you know, there are cases where, you know, you will need to, you know, be on medication or, you know, things like that, but it is possible to heal. And so I think I'm in a different place right now with my healing. And when I was thinking about what I was going to talk about and like what my story was, I kind of have to condense it because it is long. But right before the pandemic hit, literally 2 weeks before February 28th, 2020, I slipped in the cafeteria at school. And at the time thought that I wrecked my knee and like blew my knee and, you know, was dealing with going to doctor's appointments and like getting things figured out. And then the world shut down. And I'm a second grade teacher. So I saw my students on March 13th and then I didn't see them again. And at the time I was really unable to move. Like I was in so much pain. Like I've had injuries, I've had surgeries on various things, and this was just like, it was awful. And then the world shutting down, adding on top of that, I now know that I kind of lost a bit of myself, not only with the injury and it like completely taking the rug out from under me with regards to like my workout routine and movement and how much that was a part of how I regulated my emotions and my mental health in order to handle the stress of my job. And that was all of a sudden taken away. And then this completely new stressor was put on top. And I ended up having, by the fall of the following year, had to go back on thyroid medication. And ever since then, my dose has been increasing and my symptoms have been increasing. And it's just kind of been, was pretty much like I jumped off a cliff and haven't been able to recover. So that injury was the start of a very long diagnostic process for me to figure out that I had a massive tear in my hip. And it took until last March, so 2 years, for me to have surgery to fix the actual injury that I had had. And so in that, all of that time, I've been unable to regulate my emotions. I've been unable to move my body without pain, sleep. My eating habits have changed drastically. I was always known as a very calm, patient person, especially with my students. And I feel like heading into this school year, even having had that surgery, that I just feel like a shell of myself and that I'm watching myself live my life from outside my body. And so I have invested in several healing modalities, like an infrared sauna. I have a PEMF mat. Both have been incredibly helpful and beneficial because I think I'm having a difficult time detoxing because movement and, you know, moving your lymph and sweating and even just being around people that I work out with, all of that moves things through your body. And so I feel like everything over the last several years is just like stuck inside of me. I even had to go on medication for anxiety and panic attacks. And it just was all just like, it felt like an avalanche of things. And I'm just constantly like, just barely peeking through to see the outside world. So, you know, my story is quite long and complicated, but I think where I'm at right now in my journey, it's been the last, you know, 3 years that have really kind of diverted me off of my path. So something that I'm very interested in just in teaching is the brain and how the brain in development and, you know, social, emotional health and learning, all of these things I teach my students. And like, we do it on a daily basis and it's natural and it just happens. And, you know, I'm helping regulate these humans who don't have the basis to regulate themselves. So they're watching me. And so, you know, when I'm writing my story, I'm like, they're not watching who I am. They're watching a shell of myself. And I don't feel like in my life, in my teaching life, that I'm doing the things that I even ask my students to do. So when, you know, when I've seen you have this big shift into, you know, somatic healing and, you know, connecting the brain and the body and hearing about how, you know, even just talk therapy can only get you to a certain point. And so I think I'm at that point because I've done all of these things and I know how to help regulate tiny humans, but I think I need some more direction on myself and moving all of these things out of my body.
Thank you for that. First of all, thank you for sharing. I think there's so much power. I know that there's so much power in sharing because to be honest, like I am someone who brings on a lot of people to share their story, mostly like graduates from my program. But the reason I do it is because then I get messages from other people on Instagram saying, I listened to so-and-so's story. And it was the first time, you know, I heard someone who was in my boat and I feel less alone. So there's so much power in doing that. And I think that's what this platform is great for. So I know for people listening, because I do think this is going to be a podcast a lot of people listen to. I think a lot of people are going to feel heard and seen and, you know, whatever. And so I think that that's really beautiful. And so I really appreciate, and I'm sure so many other people do appreciate you sharing for that reason. And I also really appreciate, like, your perspective is just really beautiful because you're like, to regulate for what you want to give to people too, you know, and it's coming from such a like genuine place. Like, you're asking your little humans to regulate, and you want to be that essence for them and for the people around you and yourself. And I think like your motivation is going to make it quote unquote easier for you, because when your motivation is something outside of you as well, it keeps your eye on the prize. It keeps you moving forward. So I think that's really beautiful and important. And yeah, I do also want to touch on the talk therapy thing, because I know a lot of people use talk therapy. And so just for anyone listening, I'm definitely, and I know you would agree with this, but just to contextualize, I definitely think talk therapy can be helpful. And there's a place for it in the way that there's a place for lots of modalities, like you mentioned endocrinology, as well as like infrared sauna, whatever, like we bring it all together. But that being said, you know, a lot of these emotions and experiences can't be intellectualized. So it's difficult to kind of pinpoint with our mind what's going on. Like, we're like, I kind of don't really get it. So I'm not sure, but it doesn't feel good. And when we have to talk about our experiences in an in-depth way, or sometimes even at all, our nervous system thinks it's actually happening again. And this can be really traumatizing. So I'm not a huge fan. In what I do personally, and like going too in depth, especially if it's like a trauma. Of course, chronic illness in and of itself is a trauma, but we don't dive much more into just tell me your story, because I don't think it's fair on the nervous system to have to experience this again. So I agree with you, and I kind of wanted to give that context to anyone who might be like, but wait, I'm in talk therapy right now. But yeah, so in terms of just to kind of like ask a couple questions, when you fell, so were you kind of just like out of commission in terms of your ability to move until you got that diagnosis and that surgery?
Pretty much. So if I had had that injury at any other time, I don't know if I would have been able to go back to the classroom. But because it had happened right before the pandemic, I was really able to just heal. Or what I thought was healing. There was a point where they did a little diagnostic knee surgery, which I had to recover from. And then I sort of felt better and started working out again as things were starting to open back up. And then as I started moving more pain and dysfunction in my leg and in my body. And then I just kind of just stopped. I stopped everything and just was just still. I was still teaching, you know, when we returned back in the fall, I did continue teaching. I've not actually stopped teaching this entire time. But yeah, I was out of commission for what I would say was my normal.
And is it still hurting?
It is. One thing I didn't mention was right before my surgery last year, we lost our dog, who was like my soul dog. And it was very unexpected and kind of wrecked us. So I feel like I took that into that surgery for sure. And it does still hurt. It's not as bad. I'm able to start moving again. So yeah.
Do the practitioners say that you, like when you go in and you say, I'm still in pain, are they like, you shouldn't be in pain because it looks okay? Or are they like, that's to be expected?
Yes. So they, you know, I'm recovered.
Okay.
Under their mm-hmm. thing. I've done all the therapies. Mm-hmm. This fall, at the start of this school year, I slipped on a puddle of water and wrecked my foot. Mm-hmm. So I'm dealing with my foot, which I think threw off the hip. So there's a whole lot going on that's kind of impeding my healing of the hip completely.
Okay. So I asked because a lot of times, like by the time people get to me, it's either chronic pain and, or to be specific, it can be any type of discomfort. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times it's the gut, you know, so it'll be like bloating or nausea or just like sharp pain, but the tests come back clear. So the reason I ask is because it's important to get that like clarification. And usually when you're in the rock and the hard place is when you're like, I still feel the sensation, but I'm told that I shouldn't, because then you're like, well, then what the heck? Yeah. So there is an explanation for that. And I'm happy to dive into it. I don't know, you know, you said that you you're interested in the mind-body connection and studying the brain. So I might be sort of encroaching upon territory that you're already aware of. But are you happy for me to kind of dive into that, or have you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. Yeah. So something really interesting happens when we have chronic pain versus acute pain. So obviously acute is like you stub your toe, ouch, we all know that's painful, but then it's fine like 30 seconds later, right? So pain is actually a warning signal from the brain to tell us that there's danger. And it's really, really beneficial for us. It's a protective mechanism, and it has always worked in our favor. When we were surviving, you know, back in the day, caveman times, if we put our foot on something hot, like fire, we would move it and we wouldn't burn ourselves. If we had a cut or a sting, the message from the brain would be ouch, and it would send the sensation of pain, and it also controlled how painful it was and the duration. So if it's a stub toe, there's not too much danger there. So it's able to kind of take the pain away, because actually you've moved your toe and it's fine. If you get stung by a rattlesnake, let's say back in caveman days, or I don't know, you stab your leg with something sharp because you're hunting, the pain is going to last a little bit longer until you've removed whatever is causing the wound or you remove the venom. So it's always there to protect you. What happened as we evolved, obviously we lived longer. We have things like modern medicine, we have medication, and all of a sudden we have this amazing survival mechanism of the message of pain trying to protect us from danger when actually we're not in danger anymore. So it becomes very different in a chronic sense, because our brain is a little bit confused. As you know, it hasn't caught up to like our modern day and age. And so it's like, okay, I'm just going to keep sending you pain. I'm going to keep sending you pain. And the brain is purely a sort of trigger response. So let's say like initially you were triggered by the fall, but then you started to become triggered by moving your leg in this direction, or sitting or standing or breathing. I mean, it starts to obviously, you know, accumulate and become more and more painful. So it starts to memorize each trigger. And this is what we call a habit. So people are obsessed with habits. How do I form a habit? Blah, blah, blah. We love a habit. Why? Because they make our lives easier. They mean we don't have to think about something. We'll just do it. We're all obsessed with finding ways to make good habits. When pain becomes chronic, it becomes a habit. So instead of having to consistently search the environment for a trigger and then send the message of pain, which is a very long like process and involves a lot of thinking and energy, if you are triggered enough, it stops actually becoming the sort of like conceptualized thing and just sends it automatically. So movement pain, movement pain, movement pain. So no matter what you're doing with your practitioners, with your supplements, with anything, you're just going to have pain, right? And you're nodding because I'm sure you know a lot of this, but I think it is like an important point, because what happens when people get to me is like it's showing up that they have pain, but the body in and of itself is probably healed, but it's the brain that's stuck. And it's difficult because we don't get that like information, like what to do now. Like my brain is still sending these messages. And what's really interesting about it as well is that the longer we experience chronic pain, the more intense the pain becomes. So this is why it's very confusing, because people think, well, I must be getting more sick because the pain is worse. It's not because the pain is worse. It's because the brain and the body are like really confused. Like, why are you not acting? Like, why aren't you listening to my message? Okay, let me send more intense pain so that you'll react, so you'll stop doing this. Problem is, you can't stop walking, sitting. Like, you can't just not breathe. You know what I mean? Like, you've got to teach. You've got to live your life. So you find ways to live with the pain. It becomes a new normal because we adapt, if nothing else. And this is like this cyclical thing that's happening. So I think like one of the really important things always when we're addressing like an unwanted sensation is to reframe pain cognitively as a protective mechanism, because everything our body is doing is to work for us, not against us. And there's a really toxic narrative in the Western medicine culture, especially, that our body is fighting itself. You have an autoimmune disease, you're fighting yourself, you're broken. And this is just it. And we cannot heal in a body that we're at war with. It's physically impossible. When we look at the mind, it's physically impossible to step into a reality that is in juxtaposition with your identity. So first and foremost, we have to take little steps to get in alignment with the reality of being healed. And the first step, in my opinion, to sort of expedite that process is understanding why these biochemical reactions and hormonal reactions and sensations are occurring in the body, starting with the sensations we don't like the most. And so first and foremost, it's a message to protect us. It helped us survive. The body is confused. It's not, as I'm sure you know, like we haven't caught up to this day and age with our physiology. And so it's sending the message. It doesn't need to be sending it. We need to create a way of communicating to the brain that we are safe. And that's where regulation comes in. Because if we can communicate, actually, don't worry, I don't need this message. Everything's okay now. We can turn off that pain signal. We can kind of recreate the narrative in our head. And there are lots of really simple ways to do it. And I'll give you one example or two examples. We'll see how you feel with them. And then we'll implement them every day. And it's funny because the brain training is easy. It's the narrative shift to my body is working for me and that identity piece that is hard, if I'm being completely honest. So I will show you why that's the case. But before I do, does that make sense? Everything that I've kind of touched on.
Absolutely. And I've read, definitely read those sorts of things, but I like how you said that chronic pain becomes a habit. I like the way that frames, because I've never heard it said that way. So that reframes it in a way I think that's real, makes sense for people. So I'm just saying, like, this pain is in your body, or it's stored in your body. No, it's a habit. And no, we have to break the habit. And I think we understand in other ways how to break habits that aren't good for us. So I think I really like the way that you said that. I'm probably going to steal that phrase in my brain when I'm talking to my tiny people and myself too.
Yes, absolutely. It is definitely the case. We make everything a habit. If we're not careful, you know, everything becomes a habit. I mean, I know everyone's obsessed with habits, because in my program, everyone's like asking me, what about this? What about this? I'm like, okay, let's think about pain as a habit then, because it is. Anything we can automate, we will. So we want to just be as conscious as possible so we can automate in our favor. And so the brain is very interesting. It communicates with images primarily. And so this is something that I like to work with in order to create safety. So what I would like to know from you is how, when you are experiencing this sensation in relation to your hip or your pelvis, it's your hip, right? Not your pelvis.
Yeah, my hip. It was a labrum, so it's all connected. But yes,
it is connected. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So when you're describing it, what words do you use? Like, if you're like telling someone you're having. And notice I use the word sensation because I try to keep the word neutral, but don't worry, like, it's not a requirement. It's just how I do it.
So I feel like somebody's pressing on like a really bad bruise all the time. So it's just this like deep ache inside of the joint of my hip. And for those who aren't aware of having a hip injury, it is literally connected to everything, breathing, bodily functions, using the bathroom, twisting, getting like in and out of the car. So I didn't think it was going to affect my whole body in the way that it did, but it's, yeah, that it, the source is there, but it radiates up and down, into my leg. It was my left hip.
Okay. So let me ask you this. When you think, and it's hard because we're not conscious that every time we say a word, our mind is conjuring up an image.
Yeah.
We're not conscious of that. So it's happening, but we're just kind of, again, we're automated, aren't we? So we just kind of like move through our day. And what happens is when we say a word, our brain conjures up an image. And then because feelings are the language of the body, it then follows with a feeling. So let me give you an example. Soft. If I say soft, like, this is just me, there's no objectivity because everyone's different. Mm-hmm. if I say soft, I like randomly think of this chair that's like a velvet chair that's really soft, right? That would be my like mental image. And then that would conjure up sensations and feelings of comfort and relaxation. I kind of think about like what I would feel like if I'm just like sitting on it, which means I'm probably like just chilling. So like I'm relaxed. Like, yeah, it's generally like a good path to follow if I'm going to say that word. Now, I don't usually stop and think of that word or just say the word on its own. But if I had to break it down, that's a path that would follow. And it's quite powerful, the word in and of itself, because it's actually conjuring up these biochemical reactions in the body just by mental association. So when we have an unwanted sensation, the opposite happens. We start to use these same habitual words to describe because it's easier. It's right. It's faster to say deep ache or bad bruise because that's when you've been asked a million times to describe your pain. It's kind of like, okay, fine. I'm like Picasso with words now. Like the amount of doctors who've asked me to describe my pain. So what's happening is your brain has associated word trigger pain. And so because you've quite literally drawn like a web through that word to the sensation, and then the feelings are conjured up of fear, sadness, whatever else, and then back up to the brain into a spiral you can see. What we want to do is consciously reframe that using different words and different mental imagery. So here's an interesting exercise. I wrote down the two phrases, and I'm not like, I know you're not married to these, but this is how you described it. Bad bruise, deep ache. So what I want to do is try to find two different phrases that are sort of the opposite of that to describe your sensation that instigate a image and therefore corresponding feeling that's positive. So we like to use less something in order to still validate the sensation, but use a positive word. For example, instead of deep ache, I might use less comfortable. Obviously, that is something I give as an example. So I know I'm like putting you on the spot here. Can you think of something, a word that feels good for you that you could put the word not or less in front of that we could swap these words out with?
When you had said that, and before you had said put less or not, I thought of the word warmth because that feels good to me and lets me know that things are moving and working and like moving along and not stuck. Can I use that word?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. But actually, that's the best thing. Like the first word that pops up to you clearly has a very strong positive association. So like that's even better.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's why it's completely subjective, because it's like words are just how we communicate the wisdom in our body. So if that has that strong, like you said, everything is moving, it's very much associated with health, vitality, all that great stuff. That's perfect. So you could use less warm, or I wouldn't use not. I said that, but I would almost think it's better to use something that's like not definitive, which is kind of why I like the word less, because it's like technically it could be better, but it could be worse. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, less ache would be a good start.
See, ache still has a negative association.
I mean, that like my brain is so programmed to have those negative words. I feel like if I focus on that warmth, my leg is cold and dull and all of those things. I think if I could focus on the one, I think that would be good.
And what I'll do is I'll leave it with you to decide if you want to add another, because it can be really powerful just to use like one for that sensation. But obviously you then apply this to all your sensations. So yes. It is sort of a like, that could be what you use for your hip or your leg. And then you use something else, you know?
Yes.
So the goal with this exercise is to, there's lots of different ways you can take it. And it sort of depends on the person. First and foremost, the goal is to swap the narrative in its entirety. So the practice of switching the inner dialogue and the outer dialogue from whatever you would usually say to less warm. Now, there are lots of different ways that you can amplify the exercise, but the best way to amplify the experience of a sensation is to engage it with your five senses. So what does that mean? I know that you are here because you are interested in learning how to heal chronic illness through nervous system regulation. You are part of a very, very special fraction of the population who wants to do the work. This is something that I learned in my studies, that only 4% of people actually want to take control of their health and healing to move the needle forward. So thank you for being part of that 4% and for being in this community. If you stick to the work, your healing and your success is inevitable. And if you're looking for the exact roadmap to help you implement regulation techniques so that you can reverse chronic illness, turn the dial down on pain, heal chronic anxiety or depression, and just feel present, grounded, and good in your body, then I know that the Health Transformation Accelerator is for you. In my signature 2-month program, I take you through my curriculum that I wrote to help people specifically with chronic conditions reverse their conditions through nervous system regulation techniques and brain training. This highly effective curriculum, combined with my weekly live Zoom coaching and daily WhatsApp support, helps my clients propel into the best, most healed version of themselves. If you are ready to take that leap and you know that you are committed and you are ready to implement the right tools so that you can get your life back once and for all, then head to the link in the show notes and go ahead and reserve your seat on the May cohort. You guys, I run this program infrequently, and I don't know when I'm going to run it again this year. So now is your chance to get a seat before registration closes and start healing. If what I coach Stephanie on today resonates with you or strikes a chord, then just know that the Health Transformation Accelerator is jam-packed with daily exercises and cognitive shifts just like this in order to propel you into the reality where your highest self is waiting for you. Head to the link in the show notes to reserve your spot, or go to www.faithashenden.com/coaching to sign up for the Health Transformation Accelerator. See you there. What do you think of, like, you kind of described earlier, but like, what do you think of when you think of warm? Obviously, it has a strong, like, positive connotation to you. So, like, what things come to mind?
Like the sunshine, like the grass, being outside with my dogs, nature. I'm like a huge nature lover. So, like, warmth is vitality and life. So, I feel like there's just like a bajillion images flowing through my brain right now that could go with that.
That's great. That's perfect. That's my thing too as well. I'm like, yes, this is like my jam. Like, add a little bit of water to that, and I'm like right there in the same scenario. Well, that's perfect. So even if you did like a minute to 2 minutes of engaging the five senses in your perfect quote unquote warmth, for example, if you were doing that, you would think, what would you hear? So if you hear like the birds chirping or the dogs running, you know, whatever, what would you see? The grass, the green, the sunlight, a shadow. What would you feel? Maybe like touching the actual earth or the grass under your feet. What would you smell? Just like the smell of outdoors. I don't know. What is that? It's really nice. It's like, yeah, plants, you know, and then taste. You could be having, like, for me, I'm pretty much always just tasting my water because I'm literally holding like a, for those who don't see, like my huge Stanley cup. But what would you have with you? You might have a cup of tea while you're out there. Like, when you engage the five senses, you get out of your head and into your body. So we're trying to increase in this work the communication between the mind and the body. We want to communicate to the body that we're safe. So if you can increase that communication through coming to your five senses, right? Which makes sense because you're coming into the feeling and the smell and the scent. You're coming into the communication of the body. It's going to expedite this work. So again, this is one of those things where it's like, I'm telling you, this is something that has to be implemented. I would recommend 2 minutes a day meditating on the five senses of warmth. And like, the more clear you can get, the more powerful. Clarity is power, always. So like the more detailed you are in your, what you're seeing in this reality and what you're touching in this reality, the better. Then the trick, the real power is in the swapping throughout the day. Every time you think of the sensation, every time you want to say something about the sensation, it has to be less warm. What happens is if you're doing these meditations, the word warm will take you to that place, right? Where you're in the sun, your feet are on the grass, and it's going to sort of stop and interrupt that habit of like, wait a second, you know, hold on. Even though we're used to sending a sensation or a warning signal that something's wrong, we're being told that actually this trigger is associated with sunshine and grass and the smell of a hot cup of tea. And actually, that has such a strong neural association with safety that I think we might be able to break this cycle. And in that way, you're breaking that neural network. So the act of actually like switching it up and like choosing a different word is really easy. The hard part is actually doing it every single day. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I think like that the visualization is, and applying it to the pain signal is going to be huge. And it'll also be, instead of me just living with that's a normal thing, is attuning myself to noticing that there is something going on still. Like I can't ignore it.
Mm.
And because I'm maybe ignoring it and believing that this is my normal, I have to really dig and unpack it. So I think that's going to be super helpful. There's a level of dissociation that I have now with the pain in my body that I have to break through that dissociative cycle and fix it.
It's so normal. It's so normal to disassociate. Like it's the most like, it's such a common like trauma response because you have to survive. Like it's like, okay, this is happening, but there's no like rule book on that. Like there's no like instruction manual, you know? So you just kind of like, okay. And so I think again, cognitive reframe of like, this is a very resourceful response to the situation. Disassociating has allowed me to continue my life. Like I'm a strong person. I still work. I still find joy. I still have hope. I still try because I'm disassociating from this really annoying situation that I can't let drag me down. So it is a resourceful response, but now you have a more resourceful response. And so I'm always like punctuating conversations with the reframe, because the second we have this, like, why did I do this? Or this is really unproductive of me. And I'm not saying you are doing that, because you are a very positive person. And I think you very much aligned, but I always want to emphasize that, because all of our responses physiologically and emotionally and spiritually are working in our favor, constantly trying to help us survive and move forward. And so, yeah, it's like, okay, this was a really resourceful thing for me at the time. And now I can move on to this resourceful thing. And what's happening when we dissociate, or really any trauma response, is we are creating a bigger barrier between the mind and the body. So it's like, we're not even speaking the same language. So we can't release it because we don't really understand each other. Feelings can't be intellectualized. So if we're not willing to try to let those feelings come to the surface, they're pushed down and pushed down and pushed down. And then they're manifesting in symptoms in order to try to communicate. And we're like in this cycle. And so what you're doing here, which I said earlier, is strengthening that relationship. You're like gently allowing them to be heard. And you're saying, okay, like I understand what you're trying to say. Like you think there's a problem, but actually we're safe. And so we're just going to go back to, you know, what we can feel, what we can touch. It will become very automatic for you very quickly. If you're diligent, within like a week and a half, you'll already swap the word. Within 4 weeks, I would expect the sensation to be significantly lowered. If you are consistent, like significantly, if you are actually doing it like this, and again, so the hard part will be just those first couple of weeks, just trying to make sure, because the inner dialogue is the most important. But what another thing I would say to remember, the biggest barrier is twofold. One, the subconscious is highly moral and it doesn't like to be challenged. So if you are challenging the subconscious, meaning you're challenging your beliefs, your values, your perceptions, what you're doing right now, the subconscious is going to fight back. So it's going to say, hold on, this is ridiculous. Like, you don't have time for this. Or this worked for someone else, but it's not going to work for you. Stop wasting your time. Don't get your hopes up. That's a protective mechanism. Because if you know this, if you don't hope, you won't get let down. If you change your values and perceptions, it's going to be a lot of hard work and it might not work for you, et cetera, et cetera. And so the subconscious wants to keep you where you're safe, keep you where you're comfortable, because we know that's working for you. At least you're surviving. So just make sure as that's happening to thank the response. Thank you for telling me, you know, that this might not work for me. I know you're trying to protect me, but I've got this, or we don't need that anymore. It's always about like addressing it and thanking all of, you know, thank you to the dissociation for being resourceful. Thank you for the pain for letting me know at the time that there was danger. And thank you for, you know, warning me. Constant cognitive reframes will change the way that you communicate to your body. Because when you do that, you won't be fearful to listen to the messages of the body. And not only can you retrain the pain, but this bound potential energy or trauma can also come to the surface very gently, because we are seeing things for what they are. So that's really important. The other thing is your success is not determined by your ability to implement it right away. Your success is determined by your ability to bounce back. So if you say the wrong word and if you can't get it right the first 3 weeks, it doesn't matter. Your success is determined by your ability to not let yourself spiral into, God, why can't I do it right? Blah, 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 blah. No, no, no. It's fine. I'm human. Let's get back to it. That's where success lies. And when that time shortens, that's where you're going to find relief in your pain. So usually I'm coaching in a 2 month capacity. You would come to me and say, oh, so, you know, you might say, I'm so annoyed at myself. Like, I keep saying it, or I keep thinking it, and why can't I just, you know, irrelevant. You're human. Your ability to heal is measured by your ability to bounce back. So always remember that as you're moving forward, because the being hard on yourself, which everyone does, is extremely counterproductive. And again, you can thank your brain for trying to project the worst case scenario and be like, understand what you're trying to do. Don't need you anymore. Let's go back to the warmth and safety.
What do you recommend to get through that dissociative period, like to reconnect? So I think the dissociation is a little stronger than maybe me feeling like I'm in pain right now. Like, I feel okay. Like, if I think in my body, I feel okay, but I know I'm not, because I'm not moving. I'm not working out. I'm not walking the dogs. Like, there is something stopping me, but it's a dissociation that I've told myself this is normal. So I think I need to get through that to be able to then reconnect my brain to my body and tell my body I'm safe.
Yeah.
I feel like I can tell my body I'm safe, but if I'm not experiencing the sensation without really, really, really thinking about it. So is that like, would I really speak to my body and say, okay, are you in pain? And you're in pain there. I know you're in pain there, but you're not feeling that pain because you've said this to yourself, that this is just normal. I don't know if that question makes sense.
I think I'm understanding. Okay. So let me ask, like, do you do like grounding work or work with the senses when this comes up?
When, not necessarily when it comes up, but just kind of, it's just part of my daily life that I, you know, try to get into my body, and out of my brain.
Okay.
I feel like that's like a normal part of my day, but I think the dissociation, because it's been 3 years of just like debilitating constant pain. And I've just, now that I've had the surgery, I'm like, okay, well, I'm just going to have this pain or this ache or this, you know, dysfunction for, I don't know, not the rest of my life, but like, that's kind of where I'm at. Just like live with it.
Yeah, of course, because you were, well, I mean, that's the evidence that's been given to you from so many different sources. Like, that, again, the brain is highly efficient and wonderful. And so you're provided all this evidence from practitioners and from life experience. So you're like, all right, fine, I accept it, you know, and we move on. Which is interesting. So I'm going to answer that, but first ask you a couple other questions because I think this plays a part. So just one thing to know, of course, like when a person that we perceive to be like in a position of not like power, but like knowledge, like in an area tells us something, it's encoded more deeply into the subconscious. So when I work with people, that tends to be practitioners because they're typically the people who are telling you, you know, you've got this problem, like good luck. This is going to be the rest of your life. Get used to it. So that highly negative charged memory is encoded deeply into your subconscious. What happens to in the subconscious, this is where your beliefs are stored, and your beliefs shape your perceptions and they shape your identity and they shape your reality. So I'm sure you've heard of the reticular activation system, have you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, the brain is going to delete, distort, and generalize anything that is not in alignment with your beliefs. So you have very little control over this process unless you try to control it, meaning your brain automatically is forming your identity, like what you said, around the experiences that you've had, that pain is your reality. Now, if this is your identity, you cannot heal in opposition to that identity. We talked about that. I know you know that. So mm-hmm. One thing we really need to focus on is the identity piece in order to support the disassociation piece. Because if you believe that you are healing from an actual subconscious standpoint, you believe that you're healing, you will feel safe to be present. And your grounding work and all of these other things are going to work for you. Because if you thought about waking up like tomorrow morning and you woke up and your first thought was like, ah, I'm healing today. And you're like, today's going to be awesome. I'm going to like drink this water and it's going to hydrate me and it's going to get things moving. I'm going to be detoxing. I'm going to be nourishing. I'm going to be absorbing. I'm going to feel free. I'm going to feel warm. Like all the thoughts will follow when the identity is in alignment with your future. So at the highest level of the mind, if we focus on identity, trauma responses that were once resourceful fall away because we've created a sense of safety within the body. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yes. And I think I like how you said, start out the day and say, this is what I want to be, how I am, and what I want to experience. So I think that makes a lot of sense for sure.
So I think that one of the best things that you can do, and we do this in my program, is twofold. So the brain is an evidence collecting machine. Basically, everything we do is collecting evidence for our beliefs. That's it. All day long. We're like, this triggers dangerous pain. This thing tastes good. Dopamine. Well, more so dopamine than this thing tastes good. Moving forward, whatever. Everything is trigger response, trigger response. When we are working on the identity piece, we think in terms of evidence. So the first step in sort of a evidence detox is to really sit down in whatever way works for you as a reflection point and think, what do I currently believe about my ability to heal? Because that's obviously what we're talking about here. What do I believe about my, and honestly to yourself, like I'm not asking you here because this is like a personal conversation, but what do I actually believe in there and why? So what is your evidence? So your doctors might've told you something. You might've woken up early and you might've woken up and experienced pain for 3 years, you know, whatever it is. The next part is to provide sort of like counter evidence to that. So what? A doctor is just one person, just their opinion. Okay. You experienced pain. That's normal. That was a normal protective response. And now it became a strong neural pathway. It's not evidence that you are going to be in pain forever. It's evidence of that specific thing. So you're basically speaking the language of the mind and saying, so what? You know what I mean? Then, and I can write this down for you because there are like four parts to it. The next thing is to create the beliefs you want to have. So I want to believe that I'm capable to heal. I want to believe that I'm capable of creating my own reality. I'm able to go back to the gym. I'm able to move without any unwanted sensations, whatever you want, and start collecting evidence. If you collect evidence to support your beliefs manually, you will change your identity. That was a lot in one couple sentences. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Because it's like that RAS system is like, if you think about an orange car and you see an orange car everywhere. So it's like, it's the same thing, but applying it to your beliefs and your healing. And I like how you said you're collecting it manually. Like, it is going to have to be a process that I am putting that information into my system, not my brain doing it, because my brain's looking for the wrong things. So I like how you said that. I was writing as you were speaking. So those key phrases, like, so what? and the collecting those things manually. I really like that, the way that you said that.
And
thank you.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think, it's starting your day with your eye on the prize. These are my beliefs. Like, I believe that I am healing. I believe that I am going to move without any unwanted sensations, whatever you want. Don't use any words that are going to trigger a negative mental image. Because every time people join my program, 9.999 repeating times out of 10, the goals are, I don't want X. Well, you're going to get it, because the universe doesn't understand don't. The brain doesn't understand don't. So when you say, I don't, and the thing is, this is the problem. People who are trying to heal are always saying, I don't want any more pain. I just don't want it. Guess what your mind is thinking? Ooh, pain. Like you said, if you notice an orange car or read about an orange car, you're going to see 1,000 orange cars. If you talk about pain, that's all you're going to feel. The brain thinks that you're giving it an instruction to look for that throughout your day. And it's going to integrate that into every single part of the mind and the body. And it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. So focusing on what you do want is extremely powerful and really the only effective way to move the needle forward. Focusing on identity is the fastest way to move the needle forward. And then focus on the manual evidence collecting on a daily basis is going to shift your identity. This is probably the most impactful thing that you can do to heal, because everything follows from identity. Like, people are always saying, I want to change my habits to better things so I can heal. If you shift your identity, the habits will follow. Like, you don't even have to think about your habits, because if you wake up believing that you're healing, you're not going to act like someone who isn't healing. Your body and your mind are only going to automate things that are in alignment with that. So it's a much faster, more effective way to move the needle forward.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think, it's literally the opposite of dissociation.
Yeah.
So I think that's really cool. Thank you.
And that's kind of why I was wanting to answer it like that. And I think, so what does evidence collecting look like? What you do a lot is, I know you do this, is what I'm saying. Like, you follow people on Instagram who are healing. You listen to podcasts about it. Perhaps you read books about it. You obviously are all this stuff, so you are reading about it. I recommend anywhere from 10 to 30 minutes a day. I know you're busy, you're a teacher, so you're obviously swamped. If you can even put it on Audible or a podcast while you're doing something, you take a bath, take a shower even. I have a thing that on my phone that the phone goes onto the wall. So if I'm doing my makeup, I put Audible on and I just can listen to it and screenshot it if it says something that I want to write down, so I know to go back when I can. And 10 to 30 minutes a day where you go into the exercise with the intention of changing your beliefs. So that is what it takes to start changing your identity. Again, this kind of work makes the word swapping that we talked about a lot more effective. Because if you believe that you're healing and then you tell yourself, it's less warm, it all gets back into alignment really quickly. But it also makes the grounding a lot more effective, because a big reason why a lot of these practices don't work for people is because, people say, oh, do yoga, do grounding, do breath work, do detoxing, whatever. Yeah, but if you believe that you can't heal, it's kind of nice for a couple minutes, but then you go back. You're like a slinky. You sling right back to the situation you were in before, because you don't actually believe that it's going to work for you deep down in your subconscious mind. And that's why it's not working for people.
I think that's like exactly like where I'm at right now. I've used all of these things. I have access to all of these things, access to all of this knowledge, but it's not working. I know it can, then there's something in the way, and it's, you know, that subconscious deep down belief and needing to like get out of those dissociative behaviors to actually heal. So I'm like a perfect example of that. Like I'm literally sitting in my room. I'm like sitting in front of my sauna. I am like, but you know, when you had made that post, I was like, you know, this might be like the missing link, is even just hearing someone else say those things that you know are true. Like you don't believe that you can heal deep down in your body right now. And it's okay, and you can fix it. So yeah, for sure. I feel like literally have tried everything, stacks of books, podcasts, all these things. So I think that this is like a key piece that I may be missing, or again, believing that, well, maybe I don't believe that. No, you do. And yeah, so it all makes so much sense.
And I like to think about the placebo effect as an example of it, because people are like, you know, people will say, why does it matter what you believe? And you probably would think that until you're in the situation where you're actually like, I'm willing to try anything. So I have tried conventional things and maybe partially worked, but not fully. But you think about the placebo effect, and you think, if you really research the placebo effect, and I recommend the book, You Are the Placebo. Have you read it?
I have not, but I'm writing it down because
it's amazing. It's basically like an entire book of placebo effects. And what it does is it's fantastic evidence, right? Like it is literally like scientific evidence that you can literally heal your body with your mind. And what happens with this evidence collecting is you're first hearing it from other people, and then once you find it in your own life, your healing is going to just catapult. What I would say is when you notice internally that shift, that's when your healing is going to be propelled. So just make sure to be really diligent about collecting that evidence via like other stories of healing, and journaling down or reflecting upon any evidence in your life. So that's where like celebrating the small wins is really important, because the mind doesn't know the difference between big and small. What it recognizes is how you feel about it. So if you celebrate something quote unquote small, even though perhaps your thinking mind is like, don't get excited, it's not a big deal, like make sure that in this month where you're implementing this work, you're really diligent about like, no, this was like even a marginal increase, and really feel like the excitement in your body. This will send a message to the brain that you are accepting and experiencing this reality in this moment. And that's that critical moment where you can get your feelings in line with what you want. So people talk about this in manifestation, like just feel it as though it's already yours. How the hell do I do that? This is how you would do that. You would find a tangible win in your life, the smallest, tiniest thing. Get yourself to feel excited about it as though, you know, you moved a mountain. And that's when you're gonna catapult towards the identity you want. So it's the beginning of this work that's hard, but it gets easier when you're diligent about it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you.
So that's that evidence collecting piece. But yeah, and You Are the Placebo, but or any placebo study, you will see that people will, as you know, literally like heal themselves because they believe. There's these biochemical reactions that happen in the body when we believe in something. And there are just, you know, there's literature after literature after literature of this like unexplained effect that people are healing cancer and or also the opposite. Though that's sort of like a lot in terms of like actions, but does that make sense?
It does. And it sounds like a lot, but in practice, I don't think it's as much as it sounds.
I would also say as a last point, in terms of like, as you're doing the work, because as you're doing it at the beginning is the hardest, because you're still experiencing some of the unwanted sensations, in regards to the disassociation, I would recommend also tying in the warmth, or if you bring in any other words to your grounding, because that clearly has such a positive everything for you. I say association, we're talking about disassociation, it has a positive association for you. Primarily the language of the nervous system, is survival or safety. So if you can shift into that positive association, you'll shift into safety and you'll kind of like come back into reality. So I would ground into that. So for example, when you wake up or throughout your day, whenever you do that meditation where you're really engaging the five senses, use that same anchor when you feel like you're disassociated. Anchor into your safety zone and your safe place of the sensation of grass on your feet. And like, you don't even have to be there, right? You know that if you pretend in your mind, your body thinks it's still happening. So you can bring that safety to yourself at any time. But instead of, let's say, generically grounding, we can be really intentional by using what we know your nervous system already responds to, because the warmth, the grass, the sun, the birds, they're not doing it. They're not bringing you that feeling. That feeling is already yours. That feeling is you. That's you without the bullshit. You know what I mean? Like that's mine is the beach. The way I feel at the beach, that's me without all the other stuff that's holding me down in my life. But it's not bringing more of that to you. It's helping you connect with you. So the more you can tap into that, the more you can find that in all of the moments and access that which you already are. And so we want to use that safe place as much as we can and tie it all together. So it's really cohesive. So I would ground into that alongside this work to not overcomplicate, not give you 500 things to do, but really crystal clear focus. Okay, I'm getting up and I'm doing my five senses. I'm then going to reflect on my three or four beliefs. I'm going to evidence collect while I'm driving in the car, while I'm cooking dinner on Audible, easy, no extra effort. You know what I mean? And in the moment, I'm going to word swap. And in the moment, if I have a win, I'm going to write it down. And then in the moment, if I feel disassociated, I'm just going to not do anything but find my safe place. And that's it. And every time I do it, it'll get easier. It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to look like anything. It just has to feel like connecting with safety. And that's how you build the neural pathway.
That when you were talking about that safe place is like your, like you, and it's you without the bullshit. Like I literally had this, like, I just felt, I almost wanted to cry because that's like, that's exactly what it is. Like I have a like tear in my eye because it's truly like, that's where you want to be and where you know you're happy and safe and functioning. So thank you for that. That was perfect.
And it's you, what, if you think about it, you're using the simple anchor trigger to find yourself, to find safety. When you find safety, you can be yourself, feel yourself, like be the essence of peace and happiness. But then we remove ourselves from those triggers that are ultimately associated with positive things and it distracts us, but like it's never lost. We can use those memories in the same way to anchor back into that feeling if we practice it enough. And to remember that reframe of like, people always think it is this thing that makes me feel that way. It doesn't make you feel that way. That is just who you are. And it's showing you that you can be that person and you can have that. And because we know the brain doesn't know the difference between being there and imagining it, we know this because we see athletes practice and then they, in their minds, and then they perform better in reality. Mm-hmm. We see people practice the piano in their mind and then they fucking play it. And it's like, how do they do that? So we can pretend we're, you know, for me, I'm at the beach. For you, you're outside on the grass. We can pretend and we can actually access it. But the interesting thing is what it's really doing is teaching us and showing us that we are allowed to have that regardless of our circumstances. And eventually that becomes our normal, not the, you know, sort of hypervigilant, fearful, less regulated place. That is just what it feels to be regulated. And then we don't have to worry about all the other stuff because our body knows what to do to heal when it feels safe, which is why I like this approach better because it's less heavy lifting. You don't have to worry about like doing 1,000 things and like there's so much noise and like that in and of itself dysregulates you to have to remember a to-do list. We are not meant to always be to-doing when we're trying to heal. We are meant to feel, to heal. And that allows us to have this ease within the body and then the body knows what to do. So I think with all of this, if you can be diligent for 4 weeks, well, I know that if you can be diligent for 4 weeks, you're going to feel such a big shift. And this is just the beginning, right? This is the platform by which you then continue to realize all the things you can do. But first you have to get over the hump.
For sure. And I feel like, you know, in pieces and parts, I've done these things, but never applied and thought about in this exact way. And it was like one of the things that I was wondering if was even possible is like kind of connecting and finding the path through all of these things that have happened. And there's lots more things that have happened and lots of very traumatic things that have happened, you know, across my most of my teenage into my adult life. And this is it. This is how you connect the dots and come full circle and you find yourself again. So thank you so much. I'm excited to try all the things, and it's so nice now that it's not winter anymore. And I really can like, I can do these things and like be outdoors and like, you know, connect back, you know, in my mind and also in practice, like in the real world, in life.
Absolutely. And we'll check in again. Like, I want to give you some time to, we won't check in on the podcast probably, but just in real life to see how you're doing. But I'm, there will be a change because it's very powerful. So yeah, we'll check in. Gosh, we could go on forever, but I know we've got places to be. But yeah, any other questions?
No, I really want to thank you for everything. And it's something that it's hard to find is talking to someone who knows exactly like where your mind is at, where your body's at, where your heart is at, like that has been in the same depths that you have been in, you know, in a very generalized way, of course, because everybody's things are different. And, you know, you are one of the very first people that I found that had that. So I'll try and say it without my voice cracking, but thank you for helping me feel less alone. And I hope my story is helpful to someone out there. And if, you know, if anyone listening is, you know, needs someone to talk to, you know, I'm on the gram, you know, you can find me there. And I'm always here to listen and offer support. And just thank you very much.
Well, I really appreciate you. I seriously do. Like, it's all about connecting. Like I said, it's about connecting with other people who want to heal, because when we heal ourselves, we heal others, truly. So it's like, honestly, such a blessing to connect with you. Like, you're doing amazing things. Like, you're doing the hardest job. Like, I only have 2 kids and I literally feel like I've been like through the war when I end my day. So yeah. You're doing, do you know what I mean? Like, you're doing, yes. Truly, like, teaching our children to regulate is how we heal the entire planet. And so like, is nothing more important than supporting each other and like people who are wanting to do that, you know, like that's like the real work. And so I appreciate what you're doing so much. And I'm so grateful that you're part of this community. And yeah, thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much.